trình phát thanh dành cho đồng bào Việt Nam ở xa tổ quốc.
Welcome to the Hot Podcast, where Vietnam laughs with the world. I'm your host, Nghĩa Mai. In our season finale, our journey down under continues, this time featuring our good friend and Hanoi-based Aussie comedian, Paul Villanova. With him and our panel of Vietnamese comedians, we delve deeper into the comedy scene in Australia, as well as talking Australian politics and soap operas. Let's go down under, again.
Right, good day and welcome back to part two of our double part, going down under. So we have some new, we have some returning faces and some new faces joining us this week. So let's meet our panelists for this week. Yeah, returning to wannabe Aussie Derek Nguyen.
Hi. Why am I a wannabe Aussie? I'm a Vietnamese, a proud Viet.
I'll go with it. You're living in Australia. You have the accent. I'm sorry. You're trying too hard. And also making his hot pod debut is up and coming comic, Vietnamese comic from based in Hanoi. Please welcome Mạnh Cường.
Hi guys.
And last but not least, we have our special guest. He's an Aussie comic, Aussie refugee based in Hanoi as well.
Wannabe Vietnamese.
Please welcome Paul Villanova.
I'm on.
Cool. So Mạnh Cường. You're probably pretty new to comedy. How do you start comedy?
When it started this year, and when I come to Thailand before COVID, I came to a comedy club called Khao San. You guys know that?
Oh yeah.
Those guys do very great, and I meet Steve White there, a black comedian.
Steve White?
Steve White. You know what? And then I come back to Vietnam, go to another comedy show, still Steve White. And I was like, fuck.
He's everywhere.
I don't know if you guys have met Steve White. So he's a Detroit guy, and he was in like Thailand and in Koh Samui with Chris Raffleson. He was tight with Chris Raffleson, if you know Chris Raffleson, Royal Comedy.
I heard the name.
Yeah, and they're all tight, they're buddies. And then basically he had some visa issues where basically so he did a tour here, and then he came and basically stayed here for like a month or something while he was sorting out some visa stuff. Then got that sorted, then went back to Thailand to Koh Samui Road, and then literally within like 3 or 4 weeks, COVID hit and everything got shut down. he was struggling to get by completely, so he's back in Detroit now. He has his own podcast actually.
He got his podcast. After meeting him for the second time, and I also met Greg Anderson, and he said that if I want to do some comedy, and then just enrolled in, and I do my first open mic, and second, and then, that's how I started.
Cool. I remember like seeing you, loving it, Greg doing, Greg's always colorful, was interesting. When did you do your first show?
Apini one, you know, back in April.
Behind the Flower Market?
Yeah. That one.
Yeah. Was I on that show? I've done that a couple of times.
No, I don't think so. I met I don't know how to spell her name, but, she's from, Da Nang. The girl from Da Nang.
Jazzy Mass. Yeah. She was like one of the finalists for the Vietnam comedy competition. Yeah, she's very funny.
Oh, lovely. Just continue on from last week. Because last week we were discussing all things Australian. So we're just gonna continue with that. We have some pictures for you guys. So we're just gonna maybe just go through each of them, So let's go with the first one. Obviously it's something that is very close to all of our hearts, comedy. I don't know about you, Paul, but have you done any gigs in Australia, besides Vietnam?
I have done technically done two gigs in Australia. Like what? Like it was open mic and a gong show. But yeah, like I started doing comedy here. So I'll be honest, I felt way more comfortable in front of a crowd a bit now, but yeah. I guess more what you know, right?
Yeah.
How was the gong show?
What was it like?
Oh, it was horrible. Absolutely horrible. And I even managed to like fuck off the guy who, I pissed off the guy who organized it and books it all. So, oh, fuck. I messaged from here, right? And I'm like, I know a guy who's in the scene, well known in the Perth scene. And he's like, oh yeah, dude, trying to do this gong show and trying to get this like open mic here or somewhere else. And I messaged to go on the open mic at this like, one of the better venues, you know, in Perth. And they're like, oh, there's no open mic, but there's a gong show. If you know the gong show. And I'm like, yeah, sure. I'll do that. And then back in Australia, completely forgot about the gong show. Just like no show, didn't go. And then, the following week, I'm staying for an extra week. And I'm like, oh, I should really do this gong show. And I message the guy and he's like, well, you're only 6 days late. Thanks for fucking telling me. the show's fucking. And I'm like, fair enough. Like, my apologies. Like, I fucked that up. My bad. I'll probably just come down to watch anyway. But, yeah, like, sorry for like fucking you around. My mistake. My bad. Right. And he's like, oh, you know what? That's okay. I'll find some room for you. Just come down the show. And then, yeah, what's the worst spot you can be on a gong show? First is the worst one. Yeah. Yeah. Works is like, if half the crowd, you have 30 seconds of like immunity, and if half the crowd lift up their plates, then bang, gong rings, and get the fuck off stage. So I'm like, first up, walk out, and it's like, the crowd of people, as I'm walking, I haven't reached the mic yet, like, over half the crowd are like lifting up their plates. Yeah. Like, they just wanted me to get the fuck off stage. Which sounded like, oh yeah, that guy totally like set me up. And I'm like, you know what? That's sort of like sweet revenge for like me fucking around. He's gonna laugh. And then,
yeah.
I remember it not going well. And then, I tried to make a COVID joke. And then as I said COVID, like the crowd starts booing me. And then the gong master's like, wait, let him finish. And I'm like, I look at the guy, like, give like a nod. I take a breath in and I go to say something and he goes, bang, like gong. Oh, no. just like the full fuck you, which I'm like, all right. Yeah. I deserve that. That's cool. He's going to laugh about it. Yeah. That's pretty much my experience doing comedy in Australia.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Gong shows are
brutal. I feel like that's kind of like a piss, like like just, you know, like people just taking a piss at you sort of thing.
Oh, so yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I feel like.
And it was like a really
bad blood? Bad blood still or?
Oh, I don't care. If I went back, I'd try to do it again, but hopefully he wouldn't remember that bit. I did it while the Perth Fringe Festival was on, so it's like one of the second or third biggest fringe festivals in the world back when there was there was like 30-40 comedians from like were doing shows in Perth who were like from around the world plus Perth plus some Eastern States guys and whatever. So yeah, I'm like pretty much not far past like open micer, and yeah, they're all much better comedians than me.
Yeah,
and I'm like, all right, and then I did
because
view it as like a learning thing, right? Like my buddy who sort of set me up with contact with that guy. He like gave me some advice afterwards, so that was cool. And I'm like, yeah, all right. You've got to learn, right? Eat shit and learn.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because like, I know a few guys from the scene over here who did like the full run at the Perth. I think two of them went down. They totally smashed it. But yeah, I think Australia are known for like definitely the big festivals. Obviously, you have your Melbourne, and then you have your Perth, but also you have your Adelaide Fringe as well.
Adelaide Fringe is pretty big too, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and in Sydney. I think Sydney has its own festival.
Yeah. Cause have you done much stand-up in Melbourne, Derek?
Yeah. Because most of my stand-up time has always been in Melbourne, like, for the last year. Because I tried to do, like, since about, like, winter time last year. So that's like July, August or something, last year. And I did maybe at least a night a week for 6 months. So yeah, like most of the time is just, in Melbourne, 'cause I rarely do stuff, at home. my, when I first started out doing comedy, it was Vietnamese and it was opening. I used to open for Hub. You guys know Hub?
Yeah, Hub. Yeah, Chakwon.
Yeah.
Oh, Chakwon. Yeah, I know that guy.
Oh yeah.
Everybody's just like, he's not even in the band like on an official capacity. What the fuck's going on?
He's awesome. Love that guy.
Fuck, I miss that guy. Because I knew him from school. So the him that I know and the him that you guys know are very different. Like, it's hilarious. I fucking love him, man. But yeah, so I started comedy like that, and then I came here and I did most of my comedy here, mostly just open mic for like, you know, funsies and, you know, meet people and get pissed up. So yeah, mostly Melbourne. And I did a couple in Hanoi when I came back like last year, I think, in the Seven Fridays and Stand Up Bar. Standing Bar. He's going to kill me for that. We want a sponsorship from them.
Yeah, I mean, Dan will be down, you know. we're just gonna get, we're gonna, Dan Dockery, if you can hear this, we want, can you sponsor us Highway 4, any of your franchises?
Bottle shop,
Standing Bar, Pop Podcast.
two of the comedy festival things are at that venue at the fabulous Standing Bar. Come on down.
Best place in town to have your craft beer.
Great food.
IPAs, you know. Great food. Yeah. Oh, the food is actually good. The food is actually amazing. Yeah. Like I'm not brown nosing anyone. The food's amazing.
It is, yeah.
The one and only place in Hanoi that you have actually for your stand up comedy. You know?
Yeah. I think it's just a really nice space. You have a proper stage.
Raised up, yeah.
Seating area, bulb levels, balcony as well. Yeah, it's actually perfect. You imagine, you could actually have like a proper comedy club there.
There was tourists running again, I think that's like a definite possibility. And there's a couple of different things, but yeah, obviously it's a massive part of the comedy scene here through that place. It's like the premier sort of place for comedy, like all the touring acts was gone. Eliza Schlesinger wasn't gonna perform. Dan booked her, and she was gonna come over, and that was through Dan and was a touring acts come through there. A whole bunch of different touring guys come through there.
Yeah,
like I saw six or seven shows there.
Yeah.
Last year.
Especially like in Dublin, yeah, two guys who possess a startup Hanoi shirt, Hanoi T-shirt. There's me from last time I was in Hanoi, and there's Danny O'Brien, local Irish comic. He went to Hanoi. We do an open for him like a couple years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. So startup Hanoi is everywhere.
Fun place.
It's pretty interesting to see that comics are actually very international people, and because it's such a tight knit community, everyone knows everyone.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
It's weird that you can like know people and be like, all right, cool. Like through this, I've started doing comedy in freaking Vietnam and speaking to people. And when we was here, it's like people in three different countries.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh yeah, also about Steven. I know a couple other guys, American guys have gone home to America. And then I can know like through this, I know like some of the guys based out of Thailand. Like it's just weird how it all works. Horrible mishmash.
Yeah. I don't know why, because when I first met my first comedian friend, and after a week, and then I know everyone from Hanoi to Saigon, you know.
It's
connected so fun.
It's also funny to like, I'm involved in like the basketball world here as well from like my former better job. I know people in the professional basketball community in Vietnam. And then through that, like I know someone who's gone to the Thai league and the Thai professional league. And then I know someone in the New Zealand professional league. And there are people in the Australian professional league and around that. So it's just like, basketball, comedy, they're all sort of like, it's small sort of niche networks, but obviously I think they're both awesome.
I think a lot of this thing are probably helped by social media as well. I think we're increasingly connected, obviously. Yeah. And also, like, particularly for comedians, you know, you're like, you want to get a spot in another country, just message, just DM someone, you know, just DM a booker and they'll get you on.
Yeah.
Right.
And then after the show, you guys going to go have a drinks, and then that's how you make friends.
Sure. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. The touring lifestyle, you know. Yeah,
that's so fucking dysfunctional. That's just really bad for your health.
I know. It's just like, you know, you imagine also the loneliness, you know, like just going, like imagine going from another city to one city to another, like just yourself on the bus, going through your notes, listen to your podcast or your music. You arrive and then you did like 10 minutes of comedy and then you go drinking for 2 hours.
That's kind of what it is.
Yeah. I know. I think you move to a new country. You do comedy, like you say, talk shit, make friends. It's good. You can go terrible, you can go well. Who cares, man? You're there to have fun and be part of a community and give each other shit. I don't know. I feel like that
is the best kind of, the most flattering way of showing affection. It's like just to roast the shit out of your friend. Like just absolutely obliterate that motherfucker to like an unrecognizable level of humanity. Just go through their whole family tree and just like, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's affection. That's love.
Yeah.
I think as like, men as well, like we're brought up with like all the toxic sort of masculinity you're brought up with. So it's like, can't really show affection. If you hug someone, you're a fucking fag or things of like that nature. You can't be soft. So like, oh yeah, it's like, oh fuck you. I want to punch you in the face. You're the worst human being I've ever met. Means I love you. Yeah. I love you. I respect you as a friend and confidant.
That's true. Like if you're gonna like show up to like your mates, your boys and just like, hey man, I appreciate you. I love you. I appreciate you and I hope you know, we'll be friends forever.
Yeah.
That shit's gonna ruin someone's day. Like, as a man, that shit's gonna ruin your fucking day. You're like, you have cancer? Like, what the fuck's going on?
It's a whole head fuck because you're like, you're conditioned to like, not think like that, right? Like,
yeah. And then,
like, don't think like that. If you do like that, you're fucking soft. You're unmasculine. You're not a man. Like,
yeah.
Like,
which is kind of a fucked up thing to do, but then it's kind of a condition to us, but then, yeah, man, we love, man. Love's all there is. I love you guys.
I believe it's like that, right?
Oh my God. No, Jesus. I haven't seen that in a while. Wow.
that's that. And then there's one guy, some guys.
It gets me guaranteed laughs when I'm like teaching. Like, all right, this is going well. And I'm like, all right, you know what? You guys,
teacher.
You know what?
This teacher. Fuck off.
Yeah, I think somehow we managed to move from comedy in Australia to toxic masculinity.
Phát thanh cho đồng bào Việt Nam. Chương trình dành cho đồng bào Việt Nam ở xa.
But yeah, so. I think
we're just
going to jump to the next thing because fuck, I feel like I need to do a whole bunch of explaining for that.
Yeah, so we're just going to go to the second picture. You guys are probably, I think Darren and you were probably very excited about this. So yeah, just give us a lowdown on the lady on the second picture, and Manko will probably want to learn more about her as well.
Paul, you go, Paul.
Yeah, Paul, you're the guest.
All right. Thanks for that handball there, Eric. Sorry, Derek.
Gotta do it fast, man. Gotta do it fast.
I'm gonna say she's an Australian politician. She rose to prominence in the 90s on a platform of anti-Indigenous Australians and anti-Asian immigration, which is like ticking all the boxes. And then so there's two main political parties in Australia, and she was more aligned with the more right wing one. And then, but they were conservative, and she was way too, racist, even for them. So they kicked her the fuck out. And then she got in as an independent because she's from Queensland, where Rumi's from, Manquan.
I don't know where the fuck you where it is.
It's the opposite side to where I'm from. And yeah, so she did that and then basically got convicted of like mail fraud for like a political thing, and then spent a little bit of time in jail. And then it got overturned, and then she tried to get back into politics. So this is like early 2000s, and couldn't get back in. And but she would be, God, whenever there'd be a political thing where there'd be like something about.
There's always a scandal. She's always attached to.
Yeah, but like it's like you don't think where like network shows will bring in people from both sides of the argument, right? To like talk it out. She'd be on talk shows for stuff like that. And it'd be like one person being like, "Yeah, no, if you dress in blackface, that's racist." And then she coming in and giving the alternate side of point of view, which is sort of like bullshit because it's not really what. It's not like 50% of people think that. 50% of people think that. It's more like 10, 15, or 20, and then 80. But when you give her equal talking time, it's like you're giving her argument equal weight, which I fucking hate. But yeah, basically she was basically just a talking head, tried to run in state elections, couldn't get back in. And then, don't know if you guys have noticed, but in the last like sort of 5 years, most of the world swung pretty right wing and, conservative and, nationalism. And, yeah, she rode that crest. She got off that, Asian immigration train. Cause that one, that's old ball. That wasn't
one. Yeah, cause so many Asians. Love Asians now cause there's a lot of them.
Yeah. Oh, now she has a new enemy. Let's see if these guys can guess. Let's see if Man Kwan can guess. What do you think white people, in Australia were more afraid of than Asians? If we're going to name a ethnic
minority. My God.
This is going. It's going downhill.
People or animal?
People. people. Like they're not, they're not race people. It's like a religion as well. It's probably going to be a big clue.
Religion? Yeah. I don't know. Maybe, Buddhist?
Buddhist people. You are so not close.
Nice. Yeah. You're so nice.
Okay, I'm good. So these people kind of dress like you, you know.
Right now.
Holy shit.
We're going to get canceled. Regardless.
She basically rode the anti-Muslim immigration and stuff train back into political power, and she put her own party and they've won a bunch of seats. But I think it's been reduced now, but yeah, she's got a political party and basically, One Nation is their name, which, God, that just sounds inherently racist to me. That's what she's about. And she sounds super Australian. She sounds so fucking Australian.
Well, she is from Brisbane.
Yeah, her accent is fucking thick as fuck, mate. Thick as fuck.
Yeah.
Pauline Hanson.
Also, Paul, I think, Derek, what's her name again?
Pauline Hanson. If you look her up and then type Burka right next to her name, there's gonna be some interesting shit showing. That's some shit. Like when that happened, I was just like, that's literally the equivalent of doing this in fucking Parliament.
Yeah. So, I'll explain to Man Kwan. I don't know if you know. Is it like, yeah? In National Parliament, she wore a full burqa. Just the isolates. She wore that to protest against it being allowed in public.
Yeah.
As a publicity stunt.
Oh yeah. I think I saw a YouTube video. Like a magic trick.
Yeah. Yeah. But like all the, she's like whoever, when the press wants a grab from like crazy right winger or whatever, they go to her. She's their go-to basically.
Yeah, wasn't she a chip shop lady before she?
Yeah, that's what like super, in Australia we call them fish and chips.
Yeah, fish and chip shop.
So fish and chips they sell. She used to own a store there. The funniest part about that fucking thing. So obviously she first thing that made her famous was the anti-Indigenous and anti-Australian immigration thing. She sold that and moved on. And the current owners are Vietnamese, I think.
Yeah.
They're definitely Asian.
They're Vietnamese.
So there you go.
How do I not know about this?
Yeah.
I mean, it was on 60 Minutes, wasn't it?
She gets way too much press for the fucking evil hate fucking shit she spews for.
She looked like a Karen version, Archie Karen version, you know?
I think she's the mother of all Karens.
Yeah. And then first mouth is I'm about to end this man's whole career. Oh, fuck. And what the fuck about this old Asian immigrant? I don't know. Immigrant?
She has like a famous line where they ask her her opinion about something. And the first thing she said is, I don't like it. And like her voice is sort of up and that's sort of nasally and that's how she talks.
Yeah.
Anyway, you wouldn't know this, Derek, because this is way before your time. In the late 90s, a drag queen did a cover or a song about her, and the drag queen's name is Pauline Pantsdown. And it does a song where basically he just rips the shit out of her as her, like, he's like, where it's like, I like daytime. I don't like nighttime. It's too dark. like, it's almost just like one line of jokes the whole way through.
Pauline is, okay, Pauline, to me, Pauline is like, if Eminem was a woman that was born in the Deep South, that's Pauline.
That's Pauline.
She's real savage, like real vocal, real savage, real racist. And it's just, it's kind of like, to me, it's kind of a mystery. Like, how could one be racist for that long against that variety of people? Like she hates on the full spectrum of color. Like,
yeah, it's literally almost like from... it's almost like she hasn't really had any policy except for, like, being a racist fuck. And, people are on board with that.
Yeah, yeah. I think, she always mentioned
Asian, jail. Brown people, jail. Black people, jail.
Yeah.
People with masks, jail.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, that's Pauline Hanson. She's worse than Donald Trump. We're lucky to not have her as a PM.
at least Jesus if she was Christ. The PM of Australia, like, can't fuck up the world as much as Donald Trump can.
Right, so so we're just gonna move on from right-wing extremism, because obviously Paul, you mentioned anti-Indigenous Australian sentiment, so we're just gonna move on to this picture over here. Yeah, so the picture is up is the Indigenous jersey for the Australian national rugby team, the Wallabies.
Yeah, so I think it was a couple of weeks ago. We have a celebration of Indigenous culture. They call it NAIDOC Week. God, I can't remember the acronym stands for. But yeah, basically to celebrate the Indigenous people of Australia and their contributions to culture, sport, and society. The background is that's more representation of like Indigenous art. I think it's like awesome, cool as hell. There's a lot of Indigenous athletes in all the top sort of sports in Australia. I'll be honest, I don't know much about the Wallabies. I'm not a rugby guy.
It's more about things to do with Indigenous cultures and issues. Obviously, it's been a very long
and,
and hard history. Like not fun and horrific. I would equate a lot of it is very similar to how the Native Americans were treated by the English or the white settlers, basically. Similar things were happened in Australia. Some horrific, not great, not horrible. What's the thing? I'll drop all the horrible stuff and then hopefully talk about some good stuff. Australia had like systemic racism, to the fact that we didn't count Indigenous people as people until 1967. Yep. So we do a census where they gauge the population. And they wouldn't count Indigenous people. They just count. They'd say they're flora and fauna. They're flowers and animals. So yeah, not a great way to treat people. And that's only 67. So that's like within my parents' lifetime. So
that's
it's not
like, the height of the Vietnam War to say how recent that was.
Yeah.
Well, it was basically because of the Vietnam War that Asian immigration opened up in Australia. We took a bunch of Southern Vietnamese. Or anyone who's before the South, basically. And that's what opened up this is going to sound even worse because it's true. We had a white Australia policy where basically you couldn't be a citizen unless you were white or like Western European. So they just want to keep white people, make it a white country. Which is probably the reason why it's very white in certain parts.
Mm. Like I read, there's a book, what is it, growing up Asian in Australia. And there was like this essay, this story about this Asian man. He's from Singapore and he's got dark skin and he moved to, I don't remember if it's Perth or Adelaide or one of those ones.
It could be anywhere, man. Like, what Australia's like.
But like, so this was back in like when the White Australia policy was still in place. And apparently, so he was on his way home. He was an engineer, right? He was on his way home, from his work, and he was stopped by the police. And I don't remember the specific words, but they called him like some real bad terms to refer to Aboriginal people.
Yeah.
And just because of his skin color is a bit darker. And in the story, it said something like, if your skin is darker than white, you're in danger or some shit like that. This was back in the 60s. Like, the story was from the 60s. And I read that and I was shook. I'm like, fuck, like, it's that recent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Imagine the community, like all these people, like they are homeless. They have issues with, you know, healthcare, drug problems, you know, all this shit.
Yeah. A lot of the people were disenfranchised from where they were, or like basically like there's a whole generation called like there's an excellent movie about it called The Rabbit Proof Fence.
I heard about it.
It's about like that an one.
Awesome movie. Horrible and heartbreaking, and it's true. Basically, a lot of similar to like how a lot of work in the South America as well. Basically, a lot of that'd be like indentured. Blackfellow or indigenous servants or whatever working on property, and the white farmers, whoever, would get them pregnant, and then the kids wouldn't be as dark, right? They'd be lighter. Yeah. So basically, they tried to handpick the kids who were whiter, and then tried to they would take them from their parents who care for them, take them away like 400, 500, 600, 800,000 kilometers, and basically try to raise them in a church owner, government supported, but church run thing, raise them white. So like basically breed out the indigenous fella or black fella.
Yeah.
Out of them.
This is what the stolen generation. That's what it's called. If you look it up, like if you guys look it up, it will be there. It's very horrible. Recent. It's like between 1910s and 1970s, like 60s.
Yeah. I have indigenous friends and it's like their parents. Right.
Yeah, like it's fucking crazy.
Like it's not long ago. It's horrific. And yeah, like a lot of the indigenous communities as well, they're so far away from, it'd be so remote and stuff that there's nothing else out there, and this sort of stuff would go on and no one would really report it or find, there's no like press that reported in the big cities. I think it happens a lot in when alcohol or other substances are introduced to a culture of people that never had them in their diet or that were before, that fall faster into being like alcoholism and other drug related problems like really easily. And then it's like just feeds like a cultural sort of stereotype where like, all indigenous fellas are bad, or all that one guy is good. Oh, he's one of the good ones. So it's so you're saying that they're all pieces of shit except for that one? Like, no, that's not how it works. But I know it's like they're given, if you're indigenous in Australia, it's something like the Australian population of indigenous people is something like 3%, and they make up like 40% of our prison population, which is similar. I'm comparing it to America a lot, but similar to how African Americans are treated in America, incarceration problem, same thing. But like you're applying in Australia as well, you're applying like you're trying to break people out. Like people are starting, like I got a friend and his dad passed away when he was 12. Indigenous guy, his dad passed away when he was like 12, and he didn't know how to deal with it. So he just drank a lot, got drunk. The only job he can ever remember his mother having was like selling weed. That's how she would do that. And basically that's how he would get by. And so he got to be an adult and he didn't really have many skills, and like that's what he had ever known, you know. And he's like, I didn't know there was better things to do than that, right? Like because I just didn't grow up with it. Like, it's just my experience. So it's like, I don't know. It's like, starting a 100-meter race, but you're starting like 140 meters back. And then you finish last. People are like, oh, you finished last because you're a loser. You're like, no, it's because you started 40 meters behind everyone. You know, you haven't got the support or you're always treated like shit. Like, but that same guy, he's been told, he's pretty dark skinned. He's been told to go back to his own country by, some Australians in Australia, which is like the epitome of like dumb racism. It's like, this is my country. Yep. You should go back to your country.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or it's easier for white people to get like support and help. And also like in a lot of, indigenous cultures, like the social cues they take, completely different to how white people were sort of born and raised. So, my parents live in a small, tiny community base, sort of basically like in the middle of the friggin' desert in a way, right? And, I was always taught that when you're talking to an elder or someone older than you, you look them in the eye, you maintain eye contact, you respect them, and that's how you show respect. And a lot of indigenous cultures, a lot of indigenous people, like, if someone's older than you, you don't give them eye contact. If you give them eye contact, that's showing disrespect. So then, like, basically they talk to the kids and the kids would like sort of look down in a way, and that when they're getting, that was basically how they'd been raised. And then they go to like a school and then the principal or they get in trouble or whatever, and the principal talked to them and they look down away. So why are you doing that? You should be like making eye contact with me. But that's something they'll get in trouble for at home. So it's like, there's all these extra rules and other sort of stuff that go, which makes it so much harder. I think it's, slowly getting better. There's a lot of indigenous, former indigenous athletes and other stuff who are putting time towards, trying to revamp and make it better. But yeah, obviously that history, and it's, I don't know, hopefully it will just die out.
I feel like the government here is doing a lot of sweeping it under the rug and giving a lot of surface area sort of attention, and they don't really dig deep into the root of the problem, because there's so much more to get done than just, you know, saying these words that, oh, we respect this, we respect that, but they never actually do anything to help with the drug problems or the homelessness or the way these people are being treated currently, or making the way, paving the ways for these kids, like the future generation of these Aboriginal people, to have like a friendlier sort of like community, or just, because education is everything. And then these Aboriginal kids going to like schools feeling like strangers, and there's nothing being done about it, and it's so sad to see that. Like, and I feel like nothing, like, it's not being done enough to kind of accommodate the lost time, you know, to make up for lost time and lost like stuff.
Do you have any take on this? I know it's a lot to process. Lots of new information.
Yeah. Think about it like when the French came in and they tried to teach us French.
Yes. And, they tried to colonize, force everyone to learn the language, right? Because, you know, I'm not fully understand the concept of the, colonizing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Should move on. Too dark.
Too dark. Yeah. So anyway,
So next, let's talk about Port Arthur. Fuck.
Jesus Christ.
That was you, Derek. Thanks.
Control.
Right. I think that's a lot of taking, and obviously you can't solve like a 300 years problem in short space of time.
Yeah. I think it's the same with like wherever basically people were colonized by French, English, Spanish, whatever, like Portuguese, these just people were treated like shit. Someone from them murdered. Their land was, taken from them. Yeah. Like the biggest, controversy that I just want to say one more thing about that is that I'm fully behind is that, we have our national days, like June 24th or June 26th, Australia Day. And it was based to, it celebrates Australia, as when the first, when Australia was discovered by the British settlers. But indigenous people have been living on Australia for 40,000 years. So it's, it wasn't discovered. It was white people discovered.
Yeah.
Even then it wasn't, probably wasn't even white people discovered. It was British white people discovered, and then they started colonizing. So basically, like, indigenous people, what indigenous people call it, like, they're like, it's invasion day, man. That's when white people came and basically, like, murdered us and took our land. Why are we celebrating that as a national holiday?
Yeah. And
so there's this big petition that like, well, changed the date. Well, they want to change the date to another date, that can be nicer for indigenous Australians and, like, the rest of Australians, right? Like, and why can't we do that? That's great. We should be able to evolve and move with the times. And if you're going to celebrate a national day, surely there's another date we can find that has some sort of historical relevance that isn't the day when basically signifies what people's families got and their culture sort of got destroyed.
Yeah.
Change the date, fully behind it.
Yeah, so similar debate with, obviously with Columbus Day.
In America.
You know, sort of, you know, the idea of, you know, things being discovered by Caucasians. But yeah, even like in academia, in teachings as well, obviously in education, there's less emphasis on the idea of discovery. You know, we're moving away from that, more about looking at what the other side thought about. But yeah, I think, yeah, it's a very interesting thing. It's a very complex kind of thing. You know, just trying to fit everyone in, like how do we build a more inclusive national community? You know what I mean?
Yeah. If there was an easy fix, I'm pretty sure people would try to do it, right?
Yeah. It's going more into like humanity and core values of humans and anthropology and history and all that. Yeah. It's just very deep now. We're very deep in the rabbit hole.
Yeah, it's really fun. This has been really fun. Lots of jokes.
Good content.
We laugh and we learn.
It's just like human rights, and then everyone is just like, nah, too dark. Okay.
Right. So let's go on from more to a cheery topic. So we have Neighbours.
Neighbours.
Some Australian pop culture.
Everybody needs good neighbors with a little understanding. We can find a perfect place. All right, I'm going to stop.
I am doing such a bad job as a wannabe Australian because I have no fucking idea what that is.
What's you don't know what Neighbours is?
No.
I know what Neighbours are because they're on Irish TV all the time.
Yeah, what?
Man, the British what? British love freaking Neighbours, man. They
British
love
and
it.
Irish, yeah.
For real?
Yeah. My family turned us on all stream it all the time. Like in the kitchen, I can hear. Why am I here? Because I'm in the kitchen and I'm hearing Australian accent came out of nowhere from the kitchen.
Well, is that a TV series?
Yeah, yeah. Probably should explain it to my
sorry.
All right. Lesson time. What is Neighbours?
Is this something you want me to do this one as well?
No, yeah.
I mean, you're a resident Australia expert in this
case.
I've been
in these wannabe, for fuck's sake. Sure.
Not
so,
tonight.
So, Neighbours is like an Australian TV soap opera, right? It's been running since like the mid-80s or something. Super popular in Australia. It's like, it's on like 5 nights a week. Like, the episodes are like a half an hour time slot. And yeah, like, been on since, yeah, like mid-80s. God, that's like my age. Fuck. So it's like 35 years old. Shit.
Jesus Christ.
Wow. Yeah. And yeah, like, it's been exported to the UK for like a long time as well. But yeah, like the Brits, I think it's from like the 80s, like the Brits love watching it as well. But basically it's the rough thing. It's like one street called Ramsey Street. And it's basically about people who live on that street. And because it's a soap opera, crazy shit happens to them. Like a house burns down and someone gets murdered. And then there's like bad boys and then there's like good boys and there's an evil doctor. Like, yeah. But yeah, it's been running for a long ass time. Like, but yeah, I know the song. Like, I could sing the whole song. Even though I haven't watched the episode in like 5 years.
So this is like your Fresh Prince of Bel-Air of sort.
It's the soap. So it's like a drama. So it's not like funny. There are funny moments, but it's not like a comedy. It's more like dramatization of like crazy sort of things that could happen, you know, in a suburban neighborhood.
It's sort of like Korean soap. You know, you obviously, you know, you've seen like Korean soap operas, right? Sort of, you know, similar genre, similar style, you know, shit happens and you find out what's going to happen. Shit happens. Someone's got cancer and then you find out.
I was about to say, someone got cancer and then might get slapped in the head by kimchi. But if it's white people, then probably got pickle thrown at you, I guess.
But yeah, like, a lot of, famous Australian actors have been on Neighbours and then gone on more famous things. Is it Neighbours? God, who's the Australian actress who's in, like Suicide Squad?
Margot Robbie?
Yeah, yeah, Margot.
I think she was on Neighbours, man.
Really? Like, she's not that old. She's like 30.
Yeah.
Well, because she was in.
It's like a child actor or something.
Yeah, because like it's like a neighborhood, right? So it have like families, and there'll be like a teen drama is the funnest drama, right? Like, oh, this girl's kissed. Oh, she's in love with this guy. He's finally kissed her. Oh, are they gonna do it? Oh no! Oh, they did it. Oh, she's pregnant. Like, oh,
but she'll do another guy.
Maybe he's the father. Yeah, like it's a fucking soap drama. So shit like that happens all the time. Yeah. I'm now want to see if Margot Robbie is on it. I'm pretty sure she was, but like lots of other,
I think because the fact that it's been running for so long, they obviously have to change actors all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Oh, okay. All right. Here you go. Top four. Here you go. Russell Crowe was on Neighbors.
Holy shit.
Margot Robbie, 100%, was on Neighbors for 3 years.
Wow.
Do you guys know, Guy Pearce?
Oh, yeah, Guy Pearce, yeah.
He's a very, very famous, experienced Australian actor. He was on, he's in Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. He's a famous actor off that. And he's been on a whole bunch of Hollywood stuff. Memento. Have you seen the movie Memento?
Oh, yeah, Memento. Yeah.
Yeah, that's him. That's Guy Pearce. Yeah. And then, one of the most famous ones, I'm pretty sure Man Kwan was one of those ones, Kylie Minogue.
Kylie Minogue.
Famous pop artist, yeah.
Kylie Minogue.
Bruh. Fucking. Hemsworth. Chris Hemsworth.
I know that funny guy, you know? Paul. And his brother.
You know, Heath Ledger? Perth's own Heath Ledger. There's like a,
This is like acting school for like after. Australian heroes or some shit.
Yeah, man. Isla Fisher.
Isla Fisher.
She's the guy who married Sacha Baron Cohen. She's the redhead.
Derek, you should get our Neighbours.
Oh, this is juicy. 38 stars. You didn't realize? Yeah, Margot Robbie.
Yeah, I definitely.
I don't know if they cast Asians.
Derek, get on that shit, man. Come on,
I'm gonna look for auditions now. Okay.
It's ongoing. Yes, it's been going on for like 30 years now.
There's two of these main soaps. There's Neighbours, and then there's Home and Away. Was on Home and Away, which is like the other big Australian soap, long running soap, very similar. Right.
The Hemsworths.
Yeah,
but they're like Australia's Baldwins, but like way buffer.
Also better looking.
Yeah.
And he dating Miley Cyrus, right?
He was. He's married and like has kids now. He lives in this like hippie community.
Wait, Chris Hemsworth we're talking about? I think his brother.
I think his brother was.
His brother.
His brother was
Total toy boy. Total toy boy.
We're turning into suburban moms now.
I'm just reading the 35, Kylie, Jason Donovan. I don't know who that is. Guy Pearce, man. I think I said the cool ones. Donovan? Okay, Robbie.
He sound like football player.
Oh, one of the other Hemsworths got his stud Neighbours. Liam Hemsworth.
I think Liam is the one that got married to Miley. I think so.
I don't know. Maybe there's a bunch of Australian, like, pop stars who, like, Natalie Bassingthwaite, Holly Valance, Delta Goodrum, Natalie Imbruglia. They're names that literally I think Derek might know and Yeah might, because Brits fucking love these guys as well. Because yeah, like they fucking love Neighbours and these people will tour there.
Yeah, they're on. Now,
these names sounds like fucking Lords of the Rings characters to me.
Just every single one of these characters has been super white, just quietly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Derek, that's I why think, I'm like, I don't know if they're gonna cast Asians. That's.
I mean, it's 2020, so, you know, I think they had like a transgender person on it, in one of the episodes. But what?
Yeah. They do try to keep up with the times and change. Yeah. And that, I think that's the thing when you're doing 5 episodes a week, you can sort of.
For real?
Yeah, man. They do 5 a week.
Fuck me. Jesus Christ. That's intense.
Yeah. Though, there's some people have been on the show for like 20 years. 30 years. It's like, one of the famous guys, like, Toadie, one of the main characters. He literally hasn't really done anything else in showbiz but do this show. And he was on there as like a teenager and he's still on it. And now he's basically been the teenager grown up. He went to college like on the show and then he's come back and he's had a bunch of girls. And now he's like the lawyer and one of the main people in the TV show. Like,
but what the fuck?
Yeah. Like his whole life has been on screen basically on this fucking one show. Hell.
I mean, like, if that would be very strange for him to, like, if the show ends or like, he got killed off or some shit. Because, like, that is basically a full-time job, right? Like if you do a show, like, five episodes a week, that means you have to be on set basically every fucking day just pounding in.
Yeah, I think they record a lot of stuff, like, back-to-back, and they do, like, big things, and they have a break, right?
Yeah,
like, they'll write out heaps of it.
Definitely.
Yeah, I think if people that I think that's involved that so much, and if he die, I think the show probably gonna be end permanently. You know?
No, yeah. Because the way they write it is that now there'll be a strong storyline. He'll be in there for a while, but then he'll drop out and then bring So I think it'll be written into the show. Oh, he's going away for a world tour, or he's going away to study in Ireland.
He's gonna be in a Marvel cinema piece or whatever that is. I don't know.
Yeah, because like I said, because it's like it focuses on this one street, because like in Britain, in Ireland, there's so similar thing with like this opera, this soap opera called EastEnders.
Yeah.
So similar. So it's sort of like, you know, similar plot line, been running for a while. People get killed off like all the time. Yeah, like I said, you know, like it's on Irish TV like all the time. Like, my flatmate's like he's obsessed with it. No, it's like one of the Australia's most successful cultural exports.
Yeah. I feel you. Okay. Yeah. I have no input regarding this. No comment.
I hated them. I know them.
You know the songs.
I can sing it like I'm pretty sure I was taken drunkenly with Australians over abroad. It's like Advanced Australia Fair. Anyway, God, what's the Qantas song?
Qantas song. I only know the KFC
I've
one.
I've been to cities that never shut down, from New York to Rome to old London town. No matter how far and how wide I roam, I still call Australia home. Yep.
Yeah.
Remy and I have definitely drunkenly sung that.
Yeah. On that note, so this has been a pretty, very good fruitful conclusion to our special episode on Australia. Thank you
that
so much.
That was about Australia, though.
Yeah. But, so thank you so much to our panelists, to both our guests, Fergus Neil from part one and Paul Villanova for part two, and all our panelists as well. Thank you so much, and see you next time.
Beautiful. Much I learned much. So much. Yes.
Yeah. Definitely for me.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Thank you for being part of our adventure this past season. Don't forget to follow our social media for exclusive updates and all the cool stuff. Stay safe and see you in season 2.